You may be seated. So my grandmother's name was Patricia Hogan, which is, of course, where I get my name from and why my son's name is Hogan. It comes and runs in the family. Her parents came over from Ireland during the potato famine. My great-grandfather met my grandmother, my great-grandmother, who's from West Virginia, and they moved to Texas so that he could be a wildcatter out in West Texas. And so they all grew up in Midland. And both my great-grandmother and my grandmother, they were the head of the house. It was a very matriarchal kind of family. They were the ones that dragged people to church every Sunday. They were both very pious Irish Catholic women, as you can imagine. It was because of her that my dad was an altar boy and learned his prayers. It was because of her that he passed those down to me. And she died before I was ever born. My dad was in high school. She died very tragically in her 40s. But because of those things, her life has always been an essential part of my life and my story and my name. I even remember one time Dad was in the kitchen, which was odd, because he was never in the kitchen. This is when he was my parents were divorced and he was single. And he was trying to make pudding, which was like very strange to me also, like nobody made pudding. But it turned out that he had like found this this recipe. His sister had given it to him of this pudding that his mom had always made. And he was like having a real battle with it. He was like having to go back to the store and like buy more ingredients because it kept curdling. And he was like, he was screaming from the kitchen. But when he finally figured it out, right, you finally make that thing that your grandmother makes or that your mom makes or who you miss. And you get it just right, and you sit down, and there's a communion that's there, right? There's a presence that's there. There is a memory of who we are and where we come from. That's what All Saints Day is about. It's what the communion of saints is about. Not only for those that are in our immediate families, the ones that we love, our grandmothers, and our fathers and our aunts and uncles, our step-parents, or whoever is meaningful to you, but also those people that are part of the Christian family that we call saints, those who martyred themselves in the name of Jesus, those who had such a deep communion with God that they passed it down to all of us to be able to see and take hold of. Because Christian life, just like life in general, is not particularly self-evident. There isn't just a graph, a chart of holiness, a list of things that one can do, right? And then suddenly they can become a saint. I mean, you could go through that list and then you get really proud of yourself and then you become a Pharisee, right? Like it's not that easy to do. And try as people have throughout the centuries, and for good reasons, right? We learn many things about spiritual discipline, for example, through those kinds of charts and propositions. So, but it's in the lives of the people, the testimonies of those that were not perfect, but who God chose to use in amazing ways that teaches us really what it means to be holy. And it's for this reason, actually, why many of the saints, you know, St. Paul and St. Nicholas and St. Teresa, that they have hagiographies, they have stories of their own holiness so that we would imitate them and follow their example, so that we would take on in our own stories the things about God that they made so clear and evident in their own lives. And what's remarkable about this is that in the lives of the saints, I think they make real to us in a way that nothing else can the kind of thing that Paul talks about in Galatians when he says, I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And the life I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself up for me. That it's in the lives of the saints that we see real, ordinary people through whom Christ chose to live. And that we can see in an unsentimental way what it means for us to actually take part in the mission that God has laid out before us. And to know that there isn't a competition between us and God, but that God carries us along just as he carried along our parents and our grandparents and our great-grandparents in the faith. Because it isn't just their story, it is our story, because it is Jesus' story that makes our life possible in the first place. And that is an incredible, I think, lens with which to look through the story of Lazarus, of course, who doesn't speak in this section of John 11. He doesn't really do anything except come back to life. And yet it is Lazarus's testimony that is still remembered in funerals and burial services all over the world, that it is through his story that we indeed know the hope of Christ living in us from everlasting to everlasting. And as we go through that story and we see what happens with the people that love him and that encounter him, we see a deep humanness that's there. I mean, Mary asks him and says, Lord, if you had been here, he wouldn't have died. I mean, there's a beautiful way in which she holds together kind of the intimacy and the urgency of the moment, about how it is actually in the death of the saints that brings us face to face with God, because it names both a reverence and a finitude that we both experience in our lives, a trust and a lament that's there that is lingering in the background of sort of, God, you could have done this, but you weren't here. That's because the point of the story is that Mary needs God to bring about her deepest hopes, because her love is gone and her heart is broken, and she's standing in the wake and the wreckage of death, and she's desperate for holiness to be true. For the hope of Christ to not only change her future, but her past and her present. I mean, she's there with her loved one and with Jesus, trying to hold on to both, wondering where God is and what God is going to do. And the point of the saints and the point of this story is to help show us that God is always there in their lives and in our lives also. He is weeping with those who weep and is deeply moved in his spirit and in his heart, because he's troubled by the kind of sin and death that all of us encounter in our lives. That God is showing a deep solidarity in grief and in his weeping because he is a man of sorrows and acquainted with such grief. He shows us that the Creator groans with our own longings to be made new, and that he is troubled by the disconnection and lifelessness that we experience when we lose that hope. And I don't know why it is that way. I just know that in and through him and his love for the saints, we are able to see the power and love and grace and mercy and patience and care and attention and indeed the glory of God. Because that is what the cross is all about. And is what the witness of the martyrs is all about. That with us, in our limits, in our finitude, in our sickness, and even in our death, God is alongside us. God is bringing one, atoning for, making at-one-ment between us and God, because he himself aches and troubles at this sin. And so our ache and trouble in our heart that this can't be the end of our lives, we can see in Jesus that hope, that there is a love that is beyond death, a life that exists beyond that grief, that it is there, and it is there because of him. It is these things that we see in the faithful grandparents and parents and spouses and loved ones that we have that teach us and show us that death is not the end, but that the love of God is actually the thing that holds all things together. But it is this that we know and we see because of the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus. And so indeed, there at Lazarus' tomb, we see those signs of resurrection, but we see them not because Mary and Martha believed them. They didn't. Jesus, right, looks at Martha and says, "If you believed," presumably that she didn't, because she's having to relive this horrible moment when Jesus is taking the tomb, rolling the stone away from the tomb and thinking that she's going to have to face this death, and that is going to be the end of the story. So, but what Jesus shows us in Mary and in Martha and in Lazarus, not only the love of God for us in the midst of our creatureliness, but the fact that the saints are not those who are more holy than us. The saints are those who God's holiness works in and through. And God's holiness works in and through Mary and Martha and Lazarus. It intercedes for them through prayer. It intercedes through him through his word. It intercedes for them through the cross. It intercedes for us even now, making tangible to us in their life and in our life the fact that God and Jesus Christ is bringing us together with him in full communion, because it is his love that wins the day. It is his love that holds all things together, and it is his love that brings new life. Thomas Merton once said, has a lovely quote, where he says, "Many poets are not poets for the same reason that many religious men are not saints. They have never succeeded in being themselves. They never get around to being the particular poet or the particular monk they are intended to be by God. They never become the man or the artist who is called for by all the circumstances of their individual lives. They waste their years in vain efforts to be some other poet, some other saint. They wear out their minds and bodies in a hopeless endeavor to have somebody else's experience, to write somebody else's poems. But when you think of Mary and of Martha and of Lazarus, who else could they be except themselves? How else could they tell the story? I mean, how is Lazarus going to tell the story of Jesus other than, well, I died for 4 days and then I came back to life? And I don't know why, but that's what happened." That was his story to tell. And you can imagine how strange it was for him to tell it for the rest of his life, right? But it was the theology of resurrection wasn't just an abstract thing to him. I was the foreshadowing of what Jesus did on the cross, and I just know that. And so I'm telling that to you. It is Mary and Martha, their story with Jesus together, that we still know that there is only one thing that is necessary, and it is their trust in Jesus, because it is the one thing that is present here in this story. They were confused and they were busy. They had hoped for his healing when they didn't get it. They were scared to face death, and yet they continued and always did trust Jesus, and I'm sure that that is what they said for the rest of their lives. "I don't know, but I've always trusted Jesus, and it has always come out hopeful and full of love." That when we, because this is part of our story, because Jesus has made us in communion of the saints, what he is calling us to do is to see that God is working in and through our lives just as God worked in and through their lives. That God is holding us together by his love in the same way that he held them together in love in the midst of grief and of sorrow and of creaturely finitude. And for many of them, it was their weakness and their wounds and their grief that became the way in which they proclaimed a gospel of resurrection. It is true for you and me. It is true for our own wounds and our own limitations that we have all experienced, even those that we have lost, that help us to proclaim a gospel with honesty and with truth, that is full of the Spirit, that we have through this reckoned with God and we have seen God's grace work in us despite ourselves. Not because we have always been pious or we've become always prayed or because we are some kind of saint, because we are perfect, but because we are a saint by the grace of Jesus. And by the grace of Jesus, we are never alone. And so it is now here that God not only it is Mary and Martha, their story with Jesus together, that we still know that there is only one thing that is necessary. And it is their trust in Jesus. Because it is the one thing that is present here in this story. They were confused and they were busy.